For August the 9th, 2018, we talk about Forager, we do a free play multiplayer, and we get into the bullshit resurrection of the violent video game myth. Just a heads up, if you don't want to hear about current events, because they are just a real stone cold bummer, or don't want to hear about shootings or gun control, that happens at the end of the end boss section. You'll hear when we do the transition. After that, we do the you know, the admin and title section and stuff. Yeah, so welcome to level 295. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Ben is on his way, but he told us to get started without him. So he will be dropping in sometime here in the first portion of the show. Welcome to 295. That is big number. Yeah?
Yeah. I will do a Ben impression to try to just get the feel that he's on the show.
Ooh, is this going to be insulting?
Are you gonna ruin the bet now? No. I'm Ben Miracle.
Look at
that's,
me.
That's all I got. Yeah. That's all I got.
Oh man. Yeah, no, I really don't have an awful lot that I can talk about in terms of things that I've been up to. So Dennis, you had a big weekend, at least as you know, based on what you talked about last week.
A big long weekend. And I'm this kind of supplanted playing video games for the week, although I got a little in here and there. Mm-hmm. So I'll save some of it for the end, but I'm just the feedback on Deck of Wonders at Gen Con was overwhelmingly positive. I brought a prototype that was actually in a sellable format. Mm-hmm. Although it probably only represented like about 20% of what the final start of the game would even look like.
Yeah.
But people were still completely down and like just, you know, the number of people that bought and were excited to buy and came back to give more positive feedback like the next day. I was on cloud nine. I'm a big nerd, and so I tracked lots of stats, and I will share those when we get to my turn to talk about what the hell I was playing this week. But man, it felt really good. Felt like I was playing to my strengths and doing something I love on multiple fronts, you know, mm-hmm. playing games, talking to strangers, which just is weirdly like what makes me happy. So, mm-hmm. and sharing creative ideas. So, I've had myself a good week.
Nice. Yeah. For people who are listening who maybe haven't tuned in for the past, you know, like a couple episodes, Deck of Wonders is the card game that you're developing.
Yeah, Solitaire Hearthstone with Legacy Mechanics.
Yeah, it is the working title. It is the name, the current name of the... I don't want to lock you in on that name.
Apparently not trademarked anywhere, and it's one that I have kind of gotten very comfortable using. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has gotten me back on Twitter. I created a Twitter account, deck_of_wonders. Mm-hmm. And man, I mean, once you have the gigantic number of five people following you, you really can't switch away from it. So I think I'm happily locked in.
Yeah,
also storyboarding, you know, Deck of Meh.
Deck of Mundanities.
That's the expansion. It's the Normcore expansion.
Well, that's awesome. This was the first kind of gaming convention show you've been to, right?
Yes, and my God, I mean, maybe it's just Gen Con, or maybe it's the tabletop gaming community in general, but an incredibly diverse crowd. Tons of people in cosplay, tons of people just out being their best selves. And just a real happy, positive environment. So yeah, it was cool.
Nice.
And I even managed to like get myself into the con, which is a whole nother story that I'll tell, but, so I got to like walk around and see stuff, in addition to showing off my own. There's lots to talk about on that front.
Previews. Yeah. One moment here. I'm going to add Ben on. Let's see how smooth this goes. And we'll see if I have to edit any of this. Hey, Ben.
Hey, all right, sorry, I was trying to make sure I wasn't coming in on anything.
no, it's I added you on. We are in the banter.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
all right.
Yeah, so you better get yourself on the right microphone. For people Yeah, just a little bit of behind the scenes here. So it appears that for all, like, basically everybody's Skype set up except for mine and Jala's, when any of us signs on to Skype, it automatically defaults to the worst possible microphone.
It's weird they programmed it like that.
I know, right? Like,
so yeah. Much extra work. Yeah.
So, like, you know, if it had to choose between the onboard microphone on a laptop and like an old Logitech stick mic from 2002, you know, one of those ones that was kind of like a Bob Barker microphone. Yeah, it would go with that one, the one plugged into the 1/8-inch jack. How's it going, Ben?
I'm doing okay. I'm sweaty man as always. For more backstory, I always walk up a giant hill before I get back home to record the podcast. So
now Seattle, would you say that there are hills in that city?
It is surprisingly hilly. Yeah. People do not expect it, but there's a lot of hills.
Can you petition to get a funicular or a ski lift put in?
Ooh. I mean, as long as it's solar powered, then maybe. and as long as it would somehow discourage people even more from having cars in the city, then yeah, I think you could.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. How things been going, man?
Pretty good. I have some stuff to talk about for what you've been playing, grind stuff. Mm-hmm. That I'm excited about. It was just a pretty relaxing weekend, so that was nice.
Nice. And Dennis just got done talking about at least part of his good experience at Gen Con.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I heard we're at Mach 2 now.
Yes. Yes. We are. We are full steam ahead.
Awesome.
So, like, crappy razors.
So I'm going to include one crappy razor in every expansion pack. That's
how you keep them coming back. Mm-hmm. You give away the card game, but you sell them the razors. I'm marketing. David,
hashtag marketing.
David, how about you? How are things going?
Not too much. Just kind of continuing on.
Yeah.
Started doing some extremely amateur carpentrying. So,
are you going to get your deposit back?
probably not, but that's generally, I just kind of assume.
Okay. So are you talking about like woodworking kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I'm building a meditation bench, kneeling bench.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I see. Where does one buy lumber in New York City?
So there's basically like small hardware stores.
Okay.
Like, yeah, you know, ye old hardware store. There's also like a building supply in Chinatown.
Mm, okay. Yeah.
So you say small hardware store, and I just think, what is this? A meditation bench for ants?
Exactly.
They sell stuff for dollhouses. no, well, that's cool. Let us know the results. And if the bench holds weight.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely will.
I mean, it's not like you're built in a house. You're on a bench, what, like 4 inches off the ground?
I mean, you never know. Mm. It could end up being, you know, a very small house.
Nice. Well, that sounds like banter to me. I think we can go ahead and get on with the show. The usual kind of show. We've got the grind. We've got a free play multiplayer. Gonna round things out with the end boss. But why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, since you mentioned that you had stuff to play, what have you been playing, buddy?
I was going to ask if you had kept count of who hung up first last week, so we could do that this week.
But... No.
All right. So I got some old stuff and I got some new stuff. Old stuff, Assassin's Creed. I've still continued to play it. I've kind of petered out a little bit about it, especially because it keeps getting to the point where it's like, I can't remember where I was last week, but there's like one of the main upper level quests I was on, one of four. Mm-hmm. And I got a certain I got a certain way through it, and then the last like mission of it is like 7 levels higher than what I am. Hmm. So it's like, okay, well, I guess I need to wait some more. so like it's just really like frustrating because the game keeps like it does a good job of projecting what you'll be doing in the future. But it's at the point now where it's like projected a bunch of things, but then you can't actually do any of them. So you're in the weird limbo state that I think I described last week. Yeah, so whatever. So I kind of didn't play that as much this weekend, but instead I played a new game. I picked up Resident Evil 2 and started playing that.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, and so I think I had seen you play this before, Cole. You streamed this like maybe a month or two ago.
Yeah, streamed it, talked about it a lot on here. Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked it up. There was a deal for it. So I think it was like maybe like $30 and $40 online. Mm-hmm. It seems like that's probably a good price point for it. The game feels well. So you have an option of playing it through as Leon or not Veronica. What's her
Claire,
name?
Claire
Redfield. Yeah. 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 So I'm playing through the Leon storyline first. I think I'm about two thirds the way through the storyline. I definitely like it, but it feels I don't know how much more content there is in the Claire story, if it's like completely different or if it's similar to the Leon one. Do you know that answer, Cole?
So it's very similar. Claire, okay. Claire and Leon, they fight a slightly different set of bosses, especially in the end game. And they each have kind of two places where their stories diverge, where you play as one major place where you play as their side character. So for Leon, it's Ada, and for Claire, it's Sherry.
Okay.
But otherwise they are kind of disappointingly similar.
So they have the same like primary locations.
Yes.
It's still station
sewer lab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay, so then that part, I think that kind of reinforces my idea. This seems like a very similar to, like, the Uncharted Lost Legacy or whatever. It seems like a similar entry to that, where it's, like, kind of like a bitey-sized entry, if that makes sense. Like, it's a good, I don't know how many hours I played it for, but it seems like it's probably, like, a 10 to 15-hour game.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. That I think is something that I love about it, but I can see where you're coming from, that it is, you know, pretty brief.
Yeah. But it's the experience that I've had is pretty good so far. I don't want to give too much away. So I'll just say that, I mean, I've never played Resident Evil 2, the original one too. So I'm not sure how close it is for reference. So maybe that's something I'll ask you again, Cole, are the games similar, or is it just like a reimagining of the same location, but the game design is completely different and the objectives are completely different?
The game design is very, very different. The original Resident Evil 2, it is something that is in line, you know, with classic survival horror, where it's pre-rendered backgrounds, tank controls, mm-hmm. you know, there is an action kind of element. The broad beats of what you're doing, exploring the locations and finding, items to kind of do a series of not so much puzzles, but like backtracking to use keys that open up new areas that gets you new things to open up new areas. All of that is still the same. What they have done is modernized the play to where it is a very fast and fluid over the shoulder, kind of shooter action game kind of deal.
Yeah, because the gameplay feels similar to Resident Evil 4 in that sense, mm-hmm. as far or like a modern, you know, third person shooter.
I
like the game design of how like you kind of retread the same areas over and over again.
Yeah,
but you're basically trying to find you're trying to search the areas that are available for how to unlock one of the, you know, 4 or 5 locked doors that are on the map that'll open up a brand new area. And then you search that to figure out where the next type of clue is. And gradually you kind of explore 100% of the area you're in. One of the things I really like about the progression of the gameplay is you start off with kind of like a hub, like a safe zone. Mm-hmm. And you basically have to explore these kind of dangerous one-off corridors. Eventually the gameplay changes. So it's like you start losing safe zones, kind of similar to like Silent Hill 4, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then towards the ending of the first area, you cannot stop running. You need to be running like all the yep. time, which is incredibly stress inducing for myself.
Yeah.
Thank, th- thankfully they made it so that when you hit the pause to like look at the map or whatever, that stops gameplay. It's not like Dead Space.
Yeah.
So you do have a time where you can kind of pause and think about things if you need to.
Mm-hmm.
But man, like I appreciate the design. I don't like the stress that it gives me, but I definitely think it's cool how they designed it.
Yeah, it's effective would be the word I would use for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Resident Evil game. You pick up things, like you pick up jewels that unlock things. There's a key for every suit of card, like a mm-hmm. spade, club, heart, diamond.
Yeah.
All that stuff feels very Resident Evil-y to me. So that part's a really good experience. I like that it's more challenging compared to Resident Evil 4, mm-hmm. where they do not give you enough ammunition to kill everything. It's to the point where it's like, all right, you have to run around these things and deal with them instead of killing them.
Yeah.
This becomes especially true when the enemies in the basement, I don't want to spoil what they are, but I ran out of ammo very quickly after I first started seeing them, and I was like, oh no, I have to face my fears now.
Yeah, it's very much kind of the classics, or I keep saying classic, I don't mean to say, it's the old school. It is just an older fashioned, rhythm of just resource deprivation, right?
Yeah, and the fact that you pass by the enemies, I think, 4 times is really good game design as well, because you know the shoe's going to fall at some point. But, and then again, I'm trying to be very vague. The thing that you run into that makes you run around all the time towards the end of the first map, like, that's incredibly effective as being stressful as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think I might just say what it is. Is this what Nemesis is in the previous games?
It's similar to the function that Nemesis serves. So you're talking about Mr. X.
Okay.
You know, he was a widely advertised feature of the game, you know?
Okay.
And especially because Mr. X was, he was even a part of the original Resident Evil 2.
Okay.
You're not going to blow anybody's mind by spoiling that he's there.
That's true.
Yeah.
I suppose I should realize this is a remake of a game, so I'm probably shouldn't be too sensitive.
That's fine. It's okay if you err on the side, because you're still talking about the things, you're just not naming them. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's still a functional conversation. Yeah. Mr. X in this game is very similar to what Nemesis was, because Nemesis was very similar to what Mr. X did in the original RE2. All of them were pursuit agents. All of them were people who were threats that were specifically meant to shake you out of this idea of complacency, that things could not go through doors. You know, Nemesis, he would show up and he would hound you for whole areas. And Mr. X is more of a, he's more contained to the station than anything else, but there's almost no place that he won't go.
Yeah, there's very few safe zones. There's a few though. There's like a cop office, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it creates really good gameplay because like when I was in the cop office, you can still hear the footsteps of him like walk around, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so you can hear him walking by the door that you're looking at. And so you're like, all right, am I gonna have to run around him soon, or is he gonna just walk by? And so you kinda have to like bide your time and wait for him to walk by and then try and sprint and go the other direction. Mm-hmm. So like, that's really fun gameplay.
Yeah.
Again, incredibly stressful though.
Yeah. Cool about him is that there are very few times where he warps. Like there's like one or two times where he does that. That was something that was true of Nemesis. Like, you know, it was basically scripted where he would show up. Same thing with, OG Mr. X. Mr. X here, like his movement through the station is actually modeled. So like people have, broken the camera away, gone into no clip and, watched him navigating as the characters navigate.
Gotcha.
Would you describe it as like Five Nights at Freddy's-esque?
Not necessarily, because maybe. So the idea that something is moving and moving when you are not there, that is absolutely the case. However, Five Nights at Freddy's, you are stationary, whereas here it's more about planning your movement as opposed to conserving the power to keep the stuff away when it is moving. He is always moving, and he will always be on your tail.
Yes. But yeah, overall, I really like the game. I wish it was longer. I know we kind of differ on this. I wish it was as long as Resident Evil 4 and mm-hmm. as good, like, all the way through.
Yeah.
But I'm perfectly happy to play what I'm seeing right now. It seems like a really good entry to the series, albeit a little bit shorter one, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah.
How far did you get in Leon's campaign?
So I'm 2/3 of the way through, so gotcha. I think, yeah, the second or third area probably mm-hmm. is a good way to say it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that I have any other questions about it. I think I played myself out on it, doing it 2 times when it first came out for fun, then doing it 2 times on stream, and then doing it 2 more times for WoF, kind of in the span of 2 months, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Resident Evil 2 to the third power.
Yeah, it's an incredibly good video game. More weirdly, Resident Evil 2 to the third power, RE8 is the next one coming out, so.
Conspiracy.
Yeah, I want to go back and see the stream that you did of the first game just to see kind of like how we differ in playthroughs, but
yeah.
And then just a side note, I never got the heart key. Do you get that when you're Claire? Yes. I take it.
Yeah. All right, Leon gets the club and Claire gets the heart.
But I think they unlock the same location.
They get so you into the same difference. They get you into the same rooms but from different angles.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. Anybody else have questions for Ben about RE2?
Mm-mm.
Okay. What else you got, Ben?
That is all that I have.
Yeah. I'm going to do mine because it's just a snack. So last week I said I was going to get started playing Dragon Quest Builders. However, things conspired to where I wanted something that was more of a snack. So I ended up firing up a game called Forager.
Maybe I've seen this. Let me look it up.
Yeah.
I don't know what this game is, but it is either a hardcore survival sim or really cutesy.
It is incredibly cutesy, but it does have kind of survival sim crafty kind of elements. I mean, the basic verb is to punch a tree to get some logs to build something so you can punch other stuff to make new stuff. But what's interesting about it is, so this was a game, I believe, created for a game jam. So it's very simple. And the graphical style, it's very cutesy kind of pixel art. I would encourage people to go look it up. This was released a few months ago on PC, and the reason I picked it up now was because it came out on Switch, which seems like a better kind of fit for it. So what's neat about it is, whereas a lot of these kind of games, they give you, a wide open, functionally infinite plane of things to go for. Just go find a resource and get it here. You start out on like a single, not square, but you start out on like a 10 by 10 or 15 by 15 tile block. And everything that you need to harvest is on there, and stuff will, respawn as it comes up. You have to forge your own money, but harvesting gold and, building things that way to basically get the infrastructure in place. You expand the field of play, you add new tiles onto it by getting enough money to actually like buy a new plot of land that will pop up in the water next to where you start. Sometimes you have to build a bridge to get over to there, but instead of having it be like, okay, I need to like in Subnautica, where I have to research better oxygen technology to swim deeper or to swim longer, it's like literally just incredibly simple. You just buy more land and a new thing pops up, and it has its own new features, and it has its own resources and things.
So
yeah,
is each plot of land within itself randomized, or is it fixed?
It seems fixed to me.
So like every time you play, the outline of each plot of land would be exactly the same.
Yeah, and that's another thing that I really enjoy about this is that everything seems to be very simple. Things are kind of scaled back. This is not meant to be, a randomized forever game. It is kind of meant to give you a little bit like in the way that the SteamWorld Dig series played out. you know, get giving you the satisfaction of kind of making a dash for resources coming up, seeing what you can make out of them, getting into any advantage out of it and going forward. This is a little bit like that, where it is meant to kind of containerize this in a thing that is going to end relatively soon, right? So it is incredibly light, incredibly breezy, incredibly snacky. And I don't know, there's something about that loop of play where, you know, all of a sudden you can harvest a new thing, which lets you build a new building, which lets you forge a new item, which lets you harvest a new thing. Like, yes, I understand it is a treadmill, but it's a treadmill that I have a lot of patience for.
It's a daisy chain puller of the game.
Kinda, yeah. And, you know, most of the tiles that I buy, the ways that I expand the map, have included a bunch of really charming things. Like the first one that I bought, it had very large animate beets, you know, the vegetables beets. They had eyes and they could talk to you. And I didn't know this was a bad thing, or maybe this is what the game wanted to do, but they're there and they're very cute and they're sticking out of the ground. They've got, you know, little eyes and big smiles. And I'm like, I'm gonna harvest that. So I went up and I hit all of them and they said, oh, we're not angry, we still love you, blah, blah, blah. You know, I killed all the large beets and I got a little achievement that said monster. So I guess I was a monster for harvesting them beets. you know, so just
yeah, survival with the fittest.
So, but yeah, I did, you know, there's just, it's got that kind of flavor to it. There's a humility to it. There's a, limitation of scope that is very appealing to me. Any questions about Forager?
Yeah. What's the end game look like? Like, what's the overarching objective?
I have no idea.
Play until you're done with it.
Get more. Yeah. Good.
This is like the third Stardew clone that you've played right now in a row, too, right?
In a row? I don't know. I did
Stardew, Grave, and then this.
Oh, in a row. I don't know about it. Stardew was a while ago. I went straight from Graveyard Keeper to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, but yeah, there is probably a through line there. Yeah. I'm just hungry for it. I was just tired of Graveyard Keeper's bullshit being broke, being broken.
and you were as close to the end of Graveyard Keeper as you thought.
Oh yeah, I finished that up. That's
okay, good.
Yeah. What were you gonna say, Ben?
I was gonna say you're dealing with monsters in the game, but you don't get to be a monster in that game.
So. Right. You don't get to sell human meat as hamburgers at Witch Burnings. Yeah. yeah. I hope you don't mind that I'm saving you for last, Dennis, because
that's fine.
Yeah. David, how about you? What's up?
Sure. So I haven't been able to play a whole lot, but I did do some co-op with Jala, Dulce, and Greg on Vermintide 2.
Cool.
So we've made it to the final... the final level or the final mission of at least kind of the initial main game, but the difficulty spikes big time. So we haven't been able to complete it yet, but you're basically raiding a, you know, traveling through the swamps and raiding the main base of the chaos forces that you're fighting, and ends in a climactic boss fight that turned out to be quite difficult.
If I may ask, what level of difficulty are you playing on?
We're playing on the lowest difficulty.
So that the first game, I remember having kind of the loop where, you know, it, as you leveled up, as you got better equipment, that, you know, really tough final mission would eventually become fairly trivial, and at which point you'd go to the next difficulty level and kind of play back through again with your better equipment, with everything freshly chaotic.
Yeah, so that's definitely the case. This time around, they actually have on each piece of equipment kind of a sort of an equivalent of like the light level type of thing from Destiny. Mm-hmm. In that you basically have a combination of like 10 points for every For every level your character gains, and then the average of the score on your gear. And that in turn affects, mainly it affects like how easy it is for you to interrupt enemy attacks, and then how many enemies your AoE attacks can hit.
Interesting. I can't think of another game that has like a hard limit on AoE attacks. That's an interesting mechanic.
Well, to be fair, I think part of this is because it's directly modeled as like when you're swinging a sword, like how many enemies can you cut through? So it's not so much, doesn't so much apply if you're like chucking a bomb or a fireball. It's more if you're like swinging a greatsword.
God, does it like count left to right if your swing is left to right?
I think so. I'm not certain.
That's badass.
So yeah. So that's actually one of the main classes I've been playing as we've been co-oping kind of specializes in that. That's kind of their thing. So yeah, you can definitely zero in on that. So yeah, it's so this time around they have much more explicitly like each difficulty has a suggested they call it hero score. And it definitely does up the difficulty significantly, both in terms of the damage the enemies do and then also how rare healing items are.
Do they also have the kind of optional pickups throughout the level that increase the quality of loot at the expense of item slots and increases in difficulty?
Yeah, so they have, this time around, they basically have... you can pick up tomes, which, well, I guess you can pick up loot die, which just give you more loot, you know, no downside. Tomes, you know, replace your healing item. And then you can get grimoires, which both replace, I believe, your potion slot. And then also each one you have, and there's up to, I think, 2 in a level. Decrease everyone's maximum health by a quarter.
Yikes.
Yeah, so like that can't, if you're smart enough to like memorize the various hiding locations for them, which I am not, that can be a good like kind of way to work your way into the next difficulty, is if you can do a like full grimoire run with, you know, say everyone, you know, carrying tomes, then you're probably going to be pretty ready for the next difficulty.
Nice. And does it feel like it's a pure numbers game, or does it feel like it is actually rewarding increases in skill and mastery, etc.?
So I think it's very skill based. You know, it's, I'd say, a combination of, you know, learning overall, you know, just, you know, how to make, you know, good decisions in terms of like risk versus reward, stuff like that. You know, learning to, you know, cover your teammates and, you know, counter the various special enemies. There's also the melee system. Tends to emphasize a lot either the ability to block or to dodge out of the way of attacks. And so doing that, and then also like strategic movements to kind of, you know, not get surrounded is really big. So if you do that, you can become dramatically more effective. And basically you can tend to take on an almost indefinite number of just like the basic enemies, at least if you're playing as one of the melee characters.
Nice.
So it's a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot more this time around with the character customization too, which is kind of neat. So
yeah, I think I mean I put a lot of hours into the first game, and I had like one or two cosmetic items.
Yeah, so this time around, yeah, there's a number of cosmetic items, and then being able to you know, switch your classes changes what you look like. And you can also do some fairly significant changes to your stats. So, like, my favorite tends to be abilities which increase the distance that you dodge. You know, and those can be, you know, make things dramatically more effective if you use them right.
No. What, so for the cosmetic upgrades and stuff, is that hooked into the monetization, or is that just, or yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't think there's not a ton of, cosmetic upgrades, yeah. But I don't think any of them monetize. I think they all, you know, there's, well, I guess to start with, you, if you've played the previous game, you get all of the characters' like outfit from the previous games unlocked from the start. And then other than that, I think they just, drop, the cosmetics drop in, the regular loot drops, I think.
Okay.
Good stuff. And you guys kind of have a pretty solid group of four that you guys roll together, right?
Yep. Yep. Definitely.
So do you feel like there's an element of like learning each other's styles to it as well?
Yeah, definitely. And there, you know, there can be, we haven't gone real deep into this, but there also can be some elements of like party composition, because, you know, all of the characters have a DPS, or pretty much all the characters have a DPS, a tank, and a ranged class they can spec into. And also, depending on your weapons, stuff like that, you can specialize in either taking on crowds or single enemies, and you can also specialize to greater or lesser degrees in taking out armored enemies. So there's definitely, you know, a degree to which you can kind of get into that as you go.
Nice.
What else have you played?
So I've also, not surprisingly, been continuing on Warframe. They just released a new summer event, the Dog Days event, and kind of the plot line is that one of the Grineer fortresses you fight in the game, where you face one of the bosses, is kind of this arena. And the plot line for the event is that it's sprung a gas leak, which is causing the boss to get a little loopy. And so she declares that instead of having an arena, people are going to have water time fun. Mm-hmm. And that she, quote, wants a drink with a little pink umbrella. and so the game is, you know, same Warframe mechanics, except, you know, same parkour system, all that, except that you can't use any of your special abilities and everyone is equipped with a super soaker. And
this is
so,
like the snowball fight mode over Christmas.
Exactly. So you have to, you know, use your alternate fire to, like, pump the super soaker in order to, you know, have enough water pressure to do long range shots, and then just, you know, run around, take out enemies. And if the players take out more of the computer players than vice versa, you basically win. I forget what the currency, it's like marbles or something that you can trade to one of the little girl NPCs for, like, beach balls and I don't know, all sorts of like beach themed stuff. So also a kind of a pseudo Easter egg that's kind of awesome is the beach balls are basically decorations that are
you can place on your orbiter, your ship, that's kind of your home base. And if you do that, and if you have a cat as your kind of companion familiar, it will like pounce on the balls and like bat them around and stuff.
Way into that.
That's great. They also, by the way, straight up lifted the Super Soaker mechanic from the Last of Us Left Behind.
Hmm.
And it is oddly satisfying to have to pump up your gun.
Nice.
I mean, that's what No More Heroes is based off of.
Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know, did the Last of Us, was this like actually Super Soaker, or was this like they had pneumatic weapons?
No, literally Super Soakers.
Huh. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, they did,
for story reasons, I won't say more than that.
Right. It's the DLC that stars Ellie and her friend.
Okay. Presumably fighting the Wicked Witch.
They also have a Nerf gunfight in the beginning of the fourth one, I think.
Hmm. Oh, you're thinking of Uncharted, the beginning of Uncharted 4?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
No, that
wait,
I
those
like
are
that.
Different games.
Very. Yeah. Well, that all of that sounds very delightful, David.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So that's all I got.
All right, Dennis. How about you?
Yeah. So me on the video game front, not much. I played a little more Dauntless, and it's funny for favorite piece of entertainment media for my children. It's Dauntless neck and neck with Chuggington right now.
What is Chuggington? That sounds like a drinking game.
Unfortunately not. An adorable little kid show about trains.
Oh, okay. It's like Paw Patrol, except with trains instead of dogs.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny just how creative children's shows are about finding ways to not have to animate walking. Like, you got Bubble Guppies where everyone's kind of floating underwater, even though they've got lakes underwater, which makes no sense. But since everyone's floating, they don't have to animate.
Like SpongeBob SquarePants, they have a beach underwater.
Yeah, you know, it's the same kind of ethos. But at least SpongeBob has the dignity to animate their walking.
This is true.
You got all the different car shows where they're just rolling around, etc. And trains where it's all on tracks. So,
but your children, your human children, they enjoy watching Dauntless as much as they enjoy watching Talking Train Show.
Yeah, no, they are way into it. And I'm actually way into it as well, because it's just the way that game is balanced. There's some good lessons to be learned about, you know, you don't always win, and how important a team is. And so, you know, they kind of know when, if we get stuck in an arena with no teammates, that it's pretty dire circumstances.
Yeah.
And learning not to be that dick that takes the entire ether vent.
That's right. Yeah. Don't camp the ether vent. That's really the life lesson I want them to learn. But, you know, so we talk about succeeding and losing as a team, and, you know, doing things on your own versus doing things with friends. And that's just been a fun little conversation that it's unlocked. I also tried to explain the concept of grinding for a specific item to them. They were not as down with that. Like, no, we don't want to fight that again. It's like, Daddy needs this drop.
Oh, your kids have the right idea about that, Dennis. You're wrong.
Yeah, I know, but I need those sweet, sweet upgrades. So hopefully they will be better than I am.
Let it go, man. Walk away.
But yeah, so that's been fun. I'm playing with them a lot. It's also just impressed upon me, like, the extent to which you can just get carried by a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I dropped in just today on the hardest version of the Hellion. I think I could have sat in a corner the entire time. Like, this was a high functioning unit that I got teamed up with.
You're a mascot.
I was very much the mascot. I did some cool flips with my chain blades, mm-hmm. and generally tried not to stand in the lava for too long at a time.
Kept spirits up.
Yeah, I did. What is hilarious though, is that because I perpetually have the PlayStation I plugged in, there's always like a mic to the other side that can pick up my kids. And so them like cheering on the rest of the team or, you know, commentating on what's happening has actually gotten some positive reactions online.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's been very wholesome. Like, no one's been a dick. Everyone's been super cool. I feel like having those kids' voices online kind of has everyone at their best. And there's not a ton of people using mics in Dauntless. You don't really need them.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, it's like, just hearing people celebrate alongside or kind of be amused and get some joy out of kids, being so excited for them is fun.
Nice.
So, yeah. That is Dauntless.
That is wholesome.
Yeah, it's good times. The rest of my leisure time in any way, shape, and form has been taken up by Deck of Wonders, which since we talked, I carried out the plan to take it to Gen Con, even though I'm not in Gen Con. I posted up at the Starbucks across the street. And literally just had a constant stream of people to talk to. Like there was no downtime. There was always a line out the door for the Starbucks, and then everyone had to wait like a half hour for their coffee. So held hostage and just had nothing else to do. And it's like, well, I'm not at the convention anymore. I'm kind of pissed that I'm missing time I could be spending on games, but here's someone with a game to talk about. Like, incredibly receptive people.
Were there other people doing what you were doing?
No, I was the only one as far as I could tell. So maybe next year I'll have some competition for the space. but it was just incredible. Like, first off, the Gen Con environment, this is my first gaming convention of any kind. And just the niceness of the people, the diversity of the people, and just the overall vibe of the place is just, you could walk on air there. So that was really cool. And kudos to everyone and anyone who was involved in Gen Con just for keeping that really positive vibe going.
Nice.
Yeah, but I mean, people were super receptive. I set some expectations going in, and backing up for, like you said, Cole, anyone who's missed up until this episode or hasn't heard me shill yet, I over vacation about a month ago, I invented a card game called Deck of Wonders that plays like a solitaire version of Hearthstone that also has legacy mechanics, where as you play, meet certain conditions, win and lose, the deck will change, the rules will change in really interesting ways. I was already going to Gen Con because of the Glass Cannon live show I was there to see, and realized like a week beforehand, like, I am insane if I don't try to show off this little game I've invented in some way while I'm at Gen Con. I set some kind of assumptions. What I wound up developing was fully playable, self-contained, but although it only really represents about 20% of what the final game will have in it. But I said, I think I will consider this a success if about 20% of people, one out of every five, give me their emails to be on like a mailing list for updates for the game. And if about 3% of people, actually buy the game from me that I talk to. So like
very modest.
One out of every 30 people. That was based around some other assumptions that I learned a lot on. But I got to the end of the weekend and I had 60% of people sign up for email that I talked to, 61% to be exact, and 9% that I talked to actually bought the game from me. So I was blown away by the positivity of the feedback, which again, it's just a place with good vibes in general. So maybe that had something to do with it. But to have people that would like buy the game on one day and then come back and want to talk about it on the next day, and be really into it, to have, designers, publishers and everything kind of being like, this is a really cool concept. Another thing that I asked was like, does this feel different than anything else in the market? Can you think of anything else that's like this? And I had 84% of people say that this was kind of unique. This was new. Excitement's levels were high for them and for me. I'm wired that just like talking to strangers and sharing creative ideas is crack cocaine for me. Like, it just energizes me.
No.
Yes, I'm a freak, I know. And so the weekend was just phenomenal. It was a really, really cool experience. And so any questions about like what I did or stuff like that, I can get into some of the more interesting nuances after that.
What are some lessons learned about the gameplay and stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, there are some real good rules lawyers out there. So one of the cards, like kind of the biggest, strongest minion, by way of balance, when the villain plays it, will destroy another villain minion. The operative word being another, which I need to be very specific about, because the number of people that picked up and like would play it onto an empty board, which is very bad for you, right? Like that's kind of the worst case scenario, because it's like, oh, you know, there's nothing for it to destroy to at least compensate for how powerful it is, would immediately go, okay, so I'll have it destroy itself. I'm like, no, you can't do that. And they're like, the card text just says a minion, and I've played a minion, so I can destroy a minion. Curse you. Another one is there's a card called Regeneration that plays a card out of the discard pile. I just use the term play the card. In my mind, that meant that you didn't really resolve the text of the card that you were playing. But other people were like, well, kind of rules as written means that if this card has draw whatever on it, I get that draw. And so just lots of really cool lateral thinking and rules lawyering going on. And I learned about that. There were some assumptions I made about design choices. I thought it was being all cutesy that, the card, basically the card is divided up with the player side on top and the villain side on bottom. And then you play, you know, the player cards closest to you and the villain cards furthest away from you, so that the villain side and the player side are kind of, you know, facing off against each other. And I was like, oh, it'd be so elegant if I have the attack value for the player side on the left and the health on the right. And then for the villain, the attack value would be on the right and the health would be on the left, so that when they're facing off against each other, you can just look at the numbers that are closest. Mm-hmm. I learned that was completely disorienting. People expect attack to be on the left and health to be on the right. And that's just the way it is in the world of card games. Yeah. Don't you dare mess with it. So that was helpful. And there were 1,000 kind of small pieces of feedback like that, which is crazy because the cards, I'll have to upload a picture. The cards are like the most simple, under-designed thing in the world, which is exactly the right place for me to be right now. Mm-hmm. But even off of that, the refinements that could be made and like the insights that I got were incredible.
Just at the wireframe level.
Yeah, it's literally just the wireframe. No actual art, mm-hmm. Et cetera. People had a like visceral positive reaction to the story. Hmm. And you know, maybe it's just I'm good at you know, making something sound cooler than it is, but you know, the story of the game is that you've stolen the deck of wonders from fate herself. Hmm. And as you make your escape, all manner of magical creatures that you've never noticed before are coming out of the woodwork to both help and hinder you as you try to escape from fate. And just the people found that really evocative. Just that like one sentence, wanted to know more, kind of got into the fantasy of the game, I guess. So that was fun. Got some really good guidance from people who are actually like attorneys that specialize in gaming, and from some publishers and from like design leads, like just an incredibly friendly community with great feedback. And in general, has given me a ton of confidence to continue forward full steam with this.
The playtesting angle of this specifically, are people, you know, just offering their you know, off the cuff opinions. It feels really similar to the story that David brought probably about a month back or so, about the developer of one screen platformer. Doing that blog post saying like, yeah, I mm-hmm. thought I'd develop this really hard game, but then speedrunners tore it apart. Yeah. Like, yes, exactly. So it's a matter of like, okay, like how do I find the right people to tear this apart in the most constructive way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people, that was another interesting thing, is like the people that did play the game, I came in assuming that like I would basically be playing the game the entire time and talking people through what I was playing. Mm-hmm. However, no one was interested in actually sitting down, or very few people were actually interested in actually sitting down and playing the game. They kind of wanted to hear about it. And then that was enough for them to be like, okay, yeah, cool, I'm in. Or okay, yeah, you know, interesting, mm-hmm. put me on the mailing list.
Yeah.
But when I, you know, when people did play, watching them kind of keep starting hands that I'm like, ooh, that's really weak. Mm-hmm. like holding myself back and letting them make mistakes mm-hmm. was incredibly hard. Ben, I don't know how you do it.
You just have to enjoy watching people fail. No, I'm just
yeah, so there were definitely moments where I couldn't help myself, and I was like, you know, that okay, that's an interesting. Just don't. Okay, yeah, okay. You know, they kind of like, what am I missing? And then, you know, we'd talk about it. But there were also moments where I kind of just would successfully keep my peace. And actually one game, a player that kept a starting hand that I was like, oh, he's doomed. Like, this is going to suck. Actually pulled out a win from it.
Hmm.
I was like, I was totally wrong about that. I did not see what you saw. And that worked out. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, one guy came back on the second day, and we were there probably from, I don't know, from like 9 to 10:30, just playing the game over and over and over again and talking and discussing. He bought another person. But actually the very first guy who bought from me came back each of the days and just sat and talked with me for a while. Just like really cool people. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. And it was a really cool experience. And huge, huge, huge thank you to Jen, who played single mom for 3 days. While I was out there.
Yeah.
I guess that was the other wrinkle was we thought we were going to be staying with friends. And, Jen was actually planning on coming out and hanging out with them during the day. But then, the wife had to go to the ER, nothing crazy. Like it was just a migraine that was really bad. And
yeah,
they kind of went and confirmed that it was nothing, life threatening or whatever, but
still
just, I think that,
they were not up for company.
Yeah, they were not up for hosting after that. I was like, okay, we gotta rest, and so I wound up getting a hotel when I wasn't expecting to.
Yeah.
But
by the way, how did you find that?
Yeah, right. At Gen Con, the downtown hotels were about $900, so I did not do that.
No.
I spent a solid, you know, kind of 30 minutes driving at the end of the night to get out to the burbs and a Sure Stay Plus that I think they actively went in and made the rooms dirtier. Between one person and another.
Yeah.
But you know, when you've, I also kind of was in a mode where I was just at this table, and since there was a constant stream of people, I never stood up. I never ate. I never like did anything. So I would get back to the hotel room and just be so wiped that it didn't care.
yeah.
Just, which again, I'm the freak that's wired to be like, that was so awesome.
Yeah, dude, that story makes me want to go to Gen Con a whole bunch.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, insofar as my experience running booths and tables at these kind of things is analogous, you know, and especially for me as somebody who is not energized by interacting with strangers, if you come out and met me, I'm sure you were lovely. It's just not the way I'm wired. I can turn it on for a weekend, but it does drain me afterwards. Mm-hmm. All of that caveat aside, I can speak to the fact that two good days like that is worth months. It's like a month's worth of tailwind in terms of like just desire to continue moving forward with something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So yeah, oh, yeah. No, I'm very happy hearing you describe how good this experience was.
Yeah. This is like the huge adventure for me. I'm having a ton of fun, and I'm actively trying to invite people into it. Just kind of practicing what I preach in terms of getting your ideas in front of people early and often and, you know, being iterative and all that. So, if anyone listening has interest, just at me on Slack. Mm-hmm. There is now a Deck of Wonders Twitter. What's up? that is making the whole splash of 5 followers on social media.
You'll probably have more after this,
for right now, but you know, they're, you know, reach out, express interest, and I can at least get you a print and play version of the game to check out.
Yeah.
I also just in terms of like vision for where the game could go, people were so quick to be like, oh my god, yeah, and that makes me think of this, and that makes me think of that, and
it's like, fight the scope creep, Dennis.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the elegant thing is the structure of the game is such that really the like expansions, kind of regular expansions, like any other trading card game does, kind of are part of the model. So to have way more ideas than you know what to do with, and just know the couple that you're going to focus on at first, and then have this roster of really cool ideas for the future.
Yeah,
is pretty nice.
Yes, man. yes, and is good for improv. It is not good for project management.
No, not good for Kickstarter. that's the other thing is I've started, you know, amassing blogs on how to not kill yourself on Kickstarter.
Yeah,
and speaking to anyone who has experience. And just hearing over and over again, kind of the themes of like, do not overpromise, basically have your shit done and then go to Kickstarter for funding, to pull the trigger, versus promising a bunch of high level concepts and then being like, oh shit, I got to make this happen. So yeah, I'm learning a ton, having a ton of fun. And on top of it all, like I'm after I am up to, let's see here, 73 times through the prototype of the game, like 74 games played for on my behalf. Mm-hmm. I still would just, if I have free time, play it for fun. Just like I still am enjoying it as much as I did when I first invented it. So
nice.
I feel like that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What else? That's a lot of pontification on Deck of Wonders, but I have a feeling you'll be hearing more about it in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have any other questions. I'm just really happy that it was a successful weekend for you.
Yeah.
Beyond successful based on your own metrics and expectations.
Yeah, 3x expectations on a couple of metrics. So I'm happy with that. So thank you to anyone on Slack who's volunteered to playtest or who's given feedback. Like, that is invaluable as well. You guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we usually ask you a question and then you answer it. However, today, it is episode 295 on Fives and O's. We do free play, where you ask us questions and then we answer them. Or as Dennis put it in the prompt, hit us with those cues and we'll A them on air. obligatory. Let's get this out of the way. Steven asks, what you drinking?
Oh, yeah.
Water.
So David went and got water. I'm drinking water as well. All three of you went to get a drink like in the middle, like between these two segments. So I'm curious if you're like doing your homework at the last minute, like, oh shit, I need to get something interesting.
I got a carbonated water.
Okay.
I got a lemon lime carbonated water.
Oh, so dang. Pepper. All of us.
I cannot understand the whole carbonated water thing.
One of us join.
Oh, just that's a different texture. Tastes different. Burping feels good. When I drink carbonated water, it is because my stomach is upset and burping makes it feel better. Mm-hmm. Not to be gross or anything, but I live and work alone, so
it's also a good substitute for soda.
Yes.
I was talking with someone about this earlier today. I've started calling sparkling water pop. I don't know why. It's just started seeping into my vocabulary. I'll have a pop.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't it? I mean, it is soda, right?
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So someone brings me a Coke, if I ask for pop, I'll be like, I don't want this poison. I want pop.
Yeah, pop.
So the question is, 30 grams of sugar a necessary ingredient in pop? And by the way,
only if you want to taste good.
By the way, nobody else in the rest of the country understands what pop is. I accidentally said it the other day at work.
It's really hard to self-censor when you're outside of the Midwest.
Yeah.
But I feel people are not expecting to hear it when you say pop. But if they ask, wait a minute, what? You say, you know, pop, I'll take a Coke. Like, oh, yeah, okay, you're one of those. I gotcha. Yeah.
One of those. For whatever reason, I don't know why, soda sounds more Midwestern to me than pop.
Yeah, because it's those two vowel sounds, which mm-hmm. gives a chance for the upper Midwest accent specifically. Soda. Soda. Yeah, soda. Whereas pop is pop. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's not much you can do with it. I've got a 48 ounce water bottle here. It's called Bubba, is the brand name, or I don't know if it's the name of the thing. It's like insulated. It's clear. It's got a rubber straw.
It's personal name.
its name is Bubba. I drink about two of these a day. So. Yeah,
I name my beverages. Don't worry about it.
All my water, his name is Bubba. Let's hear. Jamie writes, what are your current most anticipated games coming in the last bit of 2019?
Outer Worlds.
That's mine now. Yeah.
When is Cyberpunk coming out?
Next year, 2020.
To be determined.
No.
All right. Probably Outer Worlds. That's made by the same people as New Vegas, right?
Yes. Yep.
I'm gonna zig here. I'm gonna say World of Warcraft Classic.
Oh yeah,
I've mm-hmm. never played World of Warcraft in any meaningful way, and my whistle got wet for. I mean, I gotta watch my phrasing as I talk about this group, but you know, I'm playing superheroes.
Yeah,
for that kind of you know, MMO rolling with the group, just stomping through waves of enemies kind of feel. And that's what, you know, my group of friends that plays World of Warcraft Classic and that I anticipate playing with has kind of said the experience is like. So, I'm hankering for a non sexy time MMO, and I'm thinking World of Warcraft might be that.
Oh,
I just don't see that ending well.
Oh, it's fine.
I like how there's a meta game now of like how to keep group dynamics in a stable way.
it seems to me like this is basically MMO for people who like Final Destination, no items.
Yeah, I mean, it harkens back. I played a little bit of the EverQuest Classic server, the one that basically halted things in 2002 with Planes of Power. Like there definitely is just like a different feel and aesthetic to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think my friends are nerding out pretty hard about having someone fresh to the game to take through it. Like it's a nostalgia trip for them, but it's all a known quantity.
And you haven't really played a lot of modern MMOs, so you're not spoiled for the things.
No,
that
I really have interacted with the genre. Almost not at all, man. I played just enough of modern WoW to get a Hearthstone portrait, which I think was to take a Pandalarian up to level 8 or something like that.
Mm.
And it was completely solo. I hated every second of it, which as I'm saying this might not bode well for my enjoyment.
Whatever. It's been 15 bucks for a month. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm kind of going into this unspoiled.
Nice.
So I think there's actually this weekend, there's like a test server that's going up that they're all excited about. And I'm like, all right, guys, this is the beginning of your journey of coaching me through literally fucking everything. Yep. So, and they're down for it. That's fun for them. So
nice.
I will take all the help I can get.
Yeah. Just to provide a little bit of variation on this, so we're not all Outer Worlds, I will say that I am also very excited for Doom Eternal and very excited for Planet Zoo.
What about Death Stranding?
Death Stranding will be a curiosity. I don't know that I'm necessarily as horny for that.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like that's a game to go into knowing as little as possible and having your hype as low as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's one of those games where even if you know stuff about it, you're not going to understand it.
Right.
Yeah. As a side note, Dennis, I think the most important thing is that you need to make sure to defeat Hogger at the appropriate level. No leveling past it, figuring out a way to defeat them is so rite of passage.
Yeah. Well, it's only if they play Alliance.
I think we are going Horde.
Okay.
I still think it'll still aggro you. I think you need to go to Alliance territory and fight Hogger.
Oh goodness. Yeah, I can already feel that I'm in way over my head. But yeah. I love it. It's gonna be fun.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Lindsay writes in asking, I think people use violent games, movies, and metal music as a crutch for blaming shootings and other junk. I'm pretty sure I know your answers, but I would like to hear your guys' take on this. Sorry if the question is too political. That is not my intention here to divide the show in any way. We're going to talk about this a little bit in the end boss, because that is a story that related to a story that David brought. I want to limit our time on that, but I want to address it in the proper venue there. Is that agreed? Is that an okay move?
Yeah. Lindsay, we got a whole section for you.
Yeah.
Good question.
And you probably do know how we feel about that to a certain extent. Mike writes related to that. What are some of your favorite games that have no violence verbs? Lemonade Stand.
Oh yeah,
I'm kind of joking, but like Management Sims, there are some of them where you can do harm to people, but none of them are. It's all about systemic violence, not actually direct.
That's pretty good. I Man, there's a couple that come to mind, but I'm gonna pull Slime Rancher out and say that one is fantastic.
Oh, Slime Rancher is so good. Oh my god. Yeah.
I'll go with The Witness for mine.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure I have any.
No puzzle games or anything?
The problem is I tend to not be able to get into games unless there's like an end, you know, you're working towards something or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, usually that requires some sort of conflict or, you know, competition or something like that, which almost always gets expressed as violence.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've said this a couple of times. I'd really would love to see a game that took, you know, something like, you know, racing or sports or, you know, something like that and put it in kind of the trappings of like a action RPG or something like that.
You're looking for Dark Summit, the extreme sports game from the GameCube era that had like a story about evil people taking over a mountain.
Yeah, you know, something like that. Or I mean, even just you know, something that was like a racing game that was actually, you know, had significant aspects of like character customization, advancement, and you know, things to do other than like going around in circles.
Yeah,
so like Mad Max. Oh wait, no,
wait, yes. This would not satisfy what you're asking for, but this is more of a question for the group. Would you consider the game Burnout to have no violence verbs?
Oh man,
I would say yeah.
the mode where you try and blow up as many cars as possible.
Yeah, I honestly don't know the answer. I'm just putting that out because
can you be violent if there are no other entities involved, just machines?
Yes, it was just cars.
See, I feel like it's pretty explicit that like that no one's getting hurt.
Mm.
I remember there were complaints about that at the time.
Yeah.
Really?
It's like, oh yeah, like the crash modeling is super detailed, but I can't see anyone thrown through a windshield, so this game sucks.
Where's my red concrete?
Like no drivers unless you're riding a bike, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
It's not violent enough.
Weird. What a hobby.
Can we acknowledge that no one said Subnautica?
I mean,
of violence in Subnautica.
You shoot a ton of fish.
This is true. This is true.
Yeah. Ruth writes, what kind of sauce do you like with your hot wings? Sometimes I like blue cheese mixed with creme fraiche, and sometimes something with a lot of Naga Jolokia sauce and that sweet, sweet clarified butter.
I am assuming that Naga Jolokia is made only with the finest real Naga.
Yes, they go down into the Underdark and harvest them. I don't know what kind of sauce that is. I really just roll with whatever sauce is on the wings. Yeah, so I do not dip my sauce or I do not dip the sauce. No, I do not dip the wings into ranch or blue cheese.
I will answer that my favorite kind of sauce is the sauce that he's putting on his wings, because that sounds really good.
That does sound really good. Yeah.
Roop, say when the next meetup you're going to is.
Well, you might want to hold your horses, Ben, because it's looking like Naga Jolokia is the ghost pepper, the hottest pepper in the world.
Okay.
Just watch yourself.
It's not the hottest pepper in the world.
The clarified butter might mitigate that a little bit.
I'm down with like from BW3s, I'll do Asian Zing and Mango Habanero. But I think anywhere I can get Mango Habanero is a win.
Yeah.
As a proud Midwesterner, I've gotta go with ranch dressing. It is I don't know if we've had the conversation, like I go through a truly epic amount of ranch dressing.
There was a recent commercial for Hidden Valley Ranch that has someone drinking it, and it is the most cringeworthy thing.
Oh, sounds vile.
That's a little weird, but I did recently clean out, I have a bad habit of like putting the bottle back in the fridge empty. Mm-hmm. And I did recently clean out the refrigerator and recycled 17 bottles.
Oh, Lord. Oh.
We're starting to dip into the next question.
Yeah. Christopher writes, what is your least favorite food? Well, yeah, I mean, obvious, like food that I am like morally opposed to. Yeah, people probably. It depends on the situation. I really don't like boiled the shit or canned vegetables, really.
Mm.
There was a lot of food that I was averse to. My parents don't listen to this. There's a lot of food that I was averse to just because I never had a good version of it. So like hated Brussels sprouts, hated spinach. But that's because the Brussels sprouts that I had were boiled to shit. Spinach was all cooked down and soggy. Fresh spinach is amazing. I would just eat nothing but that. And Brussels sprouts roasted with some olive oil, incredibly good. Yeah. But just boiled, flavorless, farty vegetables. No thanks.
Yeah. Never go to the UK.
Yeah. Mm. Well, yeah. What was that, David?
Or no, never go to the UK.
Sorry, I asked the wrong person. What was that, Dennis?
How did Brussels sprouts ever become the avatar of like nasty vegetables?
I don't know.
Like eat your Brussels sprouts was like the mantra, jokey kind of thing of hating vegetables. And then I actually tried them. I was like, oh, yeah, all right. Yeah.
I think it's
very dependent on how you cook them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I had them as like an appetizer at Boca, that really nice restaurant in Cincinnati. Went there for a work thing, and I was like, oh my god, this is like Brussels sprout. What are you talking about? There's flavor to this that isn't just fart. Yeah, but boiled vegetables, no bueno. Fresh snappy vegetables, yeah. Canned vegetables, no. Fresh or frozen, yeah. who else?
I'm going to go vegetable, but I think my answer is going to be a little more polarizing. I cannot stand tomatoes.
Mm.
And it is specifically, well, no, it's the taste too. I'll have ketchup. I can have salsa. But anything that has the like seeds or like tomato snot in it, I can't do. I cannot be around it. I can't even think about it without shivering. Like
raw sliced tomato, especially raw sliced tomato that has been withering like in a prep area for a long time. I am also not a fan. It offends me on a textural level.
And my kids love cherry tomatoes, and they will literally take a bite out and then like suck out the snot of the tomato, and it hurts me inside.
No,
I feel violated.
See, yeah. I feel like, and this maybe I will, you know, someday be a horrible parent. Like that would be a point where I would lay down the parental prerogative, like we are never having these again.
No.
Listen, son, you're gonna have to stop eviscerating those tomatoes.
Yeah, right. Now, how about you, Ben?
I think I'll just go with general like vinegar. I'm like, I don't need that. I'm a palate. I'm not old yet, so I don't want that.
What about like kombucha?
Is that vinegary? I don't know.
It's I got kombucha and Korean sauerkraut. Yeah, I got kombucha and kimchi mixed up.
There's a lot of similarities between all of these things.
Yeah, there is lactobacillus going on. Yeah,
I've only had kombucha a few times, but I don't remember it being vinegary. So maybe. Yeah. I'm drinking the weird kombucha.
Yeah, I can get it. I don't especially care for pickled things. I was about to say I don't especially relish pickled things, but that would have been that was not intentional, and I did not want it to be accused of being intentional.
I'm fine. Fair, relish is the worst form of pickle.
It's all sugar is the thing. It's like ketchup doesn't taste like tomato. It tastes like sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I think for me. I don't like tomatoes and onions generally unless they're strictly like cooked down into something, you know, just strictly for flavoring. And then I think though the one I probably have the strongest opinion on is
I feel very strongly that Hawaiian pizza is a crime against God and man.
Yeah, that's a thing people argue about. So I don't know if people are going to come at you about it. I mean, this is like, would you deny other people Hawaiian pizza if they wanted it, or is it just a matter of like
without question?
What about, is it better or worse when it's made with barbecue sauce instead of regular red sauce?
I think I'm not a huge fan of barbecue sauce on pizza, but I think the barbecue sauce is fine. I think it's the pineapple. Well, I think what makes it so truly, despicably evil and morally bankrupt is the fact that you're not only ruining good pizza with pineapple, but you're ruining good pineapple with pizza.
You're ruining good pineapple by serving it hot.
Also true.
Yeah.
So I'll stick up for it, but I don't have a ton of good reasons.
Where's everybody at? If somebody orders a Hawaiian pizza, are you willing to pick off the pineapple and eat the rest of the pizza? I can do that.
Probably. It just depends. I've not been in the situation, but if I was outvoted, I would see if I could handle it. And you know what? If it's a matter of other people being happy and me not eating for another 2 hours, I'll try it. And then if it doesn't, let them be happy and go.
I think in that scenario, the only picking will then be picking it up off the floor when I flip the table.
Turn the 4th of July into the 4th of shit. it's a drill tweet. It's not me. Last one here. Adam writes, I went to the amusement park Canada's Wonderland on Saturday. One of the surprises was seeing the go-karts being rebranded as Crash Team Racing. I even saw some boxes from the game on the side of the track. What game would you like to see made into a ride or real life experience? I assume that has to do with the reissue or remake of CTR that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which
we'll talk about shortly.
Oh, cool. I don't know. My answer would probably be Mario Kart. I know that's super dumb. I just that would be very fun. Like, just if there was a way to leave press the button and say I dropped a banana here, and then if somebody else drove over that spot, tracked by lasers or whatnot, and their go-kart spun out. Yeah, no, I'd be into it. and nobody can go more than like 15 miles per hour or something, like nothing that'll be a big deal. But yeah, I'd be into that.
I can't stop thinking about the Transformers ride at Universal Studios. I don't know if anyone else here has been fortunate enough to try that. Any takers?
No. What is it?
It is you ride in a quote unquote transformer, and it's a combination of like kind of roller coaster and moving vehicle ride, and then really, really well done screens, so that you're moving around and seeing different things, and it's a very just an immersive experience of kind of moving through the space and having kind of giant transformer monsters all around you breaking stuff and fighting and all that. And that was like, that ride was my gold standard for live experiences of the type that we're thinking about. So Transformers is technically a game in a couple places, so I'm going with that.
Nice.
So I think that's kind of an interesting one I hadn't considered, because I was thinking in terms of like experiences where it would still be an overtly like interactive experience, kind of a direct recreation. But I think the idea of like, I don't know, could you make Silent Hill, haunted house ride or something?
Yeah, that would be really good.
Yeah, I feel like there could be a lot of mileage in that. Also, actually, on the other side of the spectrum from that, like, I would definitely want to go on the Silent Hill haunted house ride. But afterwards, I would also really want to go on the Luigi's Mansion haunted house ride.
That would be so good. Oh, my God. Yeah, Luigi's Mansion would be very good.
So,
The other one, just in terms of this is probably just the, I need to stop slacking off and go to the community garden, but like Harvest Moon.
Oh, yeah. People just do that in real life. It happens.
Yes, but not in cities of, however many million.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think for my answer, I want to say L.A. Noir, just because I want to see real life people do the like doubtful face loop.
Of a question. Yeah, I'm obviously lying face. Hey, Greta.
Yeah. And I just want to be able to stare people down for like 30 seconds before I just say doubt.
I mean, if we could do if someone could do like the murder mystery dinner, but with Alpha Protocol. That would be pretty badass.
Nice.
Oh, I'm going to a murder mystery dinner this weekend.
Nice. I mean, it's gonna be fantastic. Does anybody else know it's going to be a murder mystery dinner?
Cole, we need to delete this episode.
Okay.
Release this on Monday, not Saturday.
Oh, God. So, cool. Did everybody answer? Ben, what was yours?
The Black.
Oh, the what?
L.A. Noir.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Sorry. I was very disturbed by Dennis's. Cool. Thank you, everybody. Sorry, we kind of cut that short, but the episode is running a little bit. Thank you so much for participating. We'll get to your questions later on. We're going to put them all up in cleanup. Sorry, one of the questions was very funny, but we'll get to them at some point in the future. If you want to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that either excite or invigorate us. Invigorate's the right word, right? about
as in like full of piss and invigorate.
Yes.
But apparently not vinegar.
No.
Hate it.
Let's see here. I've got mine, and it's really nothing. We knew there was another Resident Evil game coming out, but there is reporting on some of these Resident Evil fan sites that Capcom has started reaching out to some people who had already been playing, signed up for Capcom accounts, playing Resident Evil, etc., offering for them to become part of the Resident Evil Ambassador Program to, starting this September, start testing an upcoming RE game that is being developed by Capcom Division 1, which is, the big league team. It's been... a few years since our Resident Evil 7 came out. Like we said, Resident Evil 2, a little bit of a lark. Who knows what this is about? But I mean, it means that they are at least a point where they are doing a test that is outside the company. That is also they're willing to kind of let it be publicized a little bit.
And how much is this standard practice? Like, I don't think I've ever seen a story about this kind of pulling in ambassadors for testing before. I know like there's like review weekends where people go and kind of lock themselves in a hotel and play the game.
Yeah.
But is this like weird for them? Is this par for the course? Like, give me some context for how abnormal this is.
I can't think of a previous example. Like, there's like a little bit of precedence for this in MMOs. But for Capcom, don't know.
And like this kind of, hopefully it's not this, but kind of games by crowdsourcing or games by committee, even a committee of fans. How good of an idea do you think that is?
I don't know. I think if they're at the point where they're willing to open it up, I think that based on their recent output, I would trust Capcom to know what kind of feedback would be good and bad for the final product.
Yeah, I think it's probably more like playtesting to see like what levels work for people and what don't. It would be really sad if like they were doing this like a TV like pilot or something like that, where they're like, oh, fans didn't like this level, we should scrap the entire thing.
Yeah. We got to retool it. Yeah.
I mean, it would also suck if all these ambassadors were essentially QA testers, right?
I mean, that's a little bit what they, yeah.
You're only here to try to break the geometry.
Yes.
We care none about any of your other feedback.
But I think you know, I trust them. Who knows how
Capcom has definitely earned some good faith recently.
Yeah. Dennis, what's the story you brought?
Yeah, so we talked about CTR, and they're trying to have a comeback. There's Crash Team Racing Nitro Fuel coming out here. And unfortunately, it is becoming an avatar of the shittiest practice in gaming, which isn't just having microtransactions in everything. It is promising and getting good press for not having microtransactions and then quietly patching it in after a game's launch, which is what happened with Crash Team Racing, and has happened on several Activision games now, the Call of Duty remake included, and is just a very, very troubling trend in my mind of this. You know, they've realized that people are like, do not put any microtransactions in my game, period, exclamation point. So they, you know, get pressed for not doing it and then just patch it in later. So what am I excited for about all this? I'm like, all right, bring on the legislation. This is the last straw for me. Like, let's go get the government in here, put some rules down. I know it'll be ham-fisted and overreaching, but this is just the scummiest of the scummy way to do things.
Yeah.
Because literally there is an interview where a developer for the game, like the selling point of the interview, the big announcement, that was the reason for the interview is we're not doing microtransactions.
Yeah, bullshit.
And here they are. Yeah, just fuck that.
Yeah, no, that is horrible. The bait and switch. It's bad that it's even an announcement they can make and get people to applaud for. Yay, you didn't do the bad thing, but to do the bad thing anyway. Yeah, no, you're not on the team.
Yeah.
I think I've mentioned this before, but I don't have internet connected to my PS4, and I want to see how long I can go without having to do that. See what game makes me have to connect to my internet.
Did you guys see, I mean, we've kind of missed the window on this. Did you guys see the whole kerfuffle around, what was it, Bethesda having a login requirement on their legacy version of Doom?
Oh, that spawned some good memes.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Funny. Like you know better. I know there's humans on the other side of this decision, and you know better. Like,
but not humans that they're paying.
The weird thing about that is, that was the big story. The story that I wish had gotten more attention was the fact that the version that they put out, the version of Doom that they put out, on modern systems, they pull the old versions off of other platforms. Mm. But it is a Unity remake of Doom, and it's like 600 megabytes, which what?
Yeah. Huh.
Really weird. Yeah, bad. Let's see here. Ben, what you got?
Since there wasn't any news about Gloomhaven, I don't have a news story.
Okie doke. And then finally here, David, you brought the ruckus. What's your story?
Yeah, so, you know, our national embarrassment, a.k.a. president, who I would remind you is well known for encouraging violence in his followers at rallies.
Yep.
Has announced that the problem with all these shootings is, or at least part of the problem, is violent video games. And that he's going to be looking into that.
Yeah. Well,
I was just going to say, luckily, you know, with his general level of incompetence, like, that's basically all he said, is I'm going to be looking at that thing.
Yeah,
but, you know.
And since cracking down on video games would only marginally affect brown people, I doubt that he's going to pursue it with any vigor.
Truth.
Yeah. So it's ridiculous to see this argument trotted out in 2019. I was honestly gobsmacked that in the midst of all of the attempts to blame distal causes as opposed to proximate causes for the current epidemic of gun related violence, hate crimes, etc., I was it was gobsmacking that anybody brought this out, and you know, the kickback and the response to it was heartening to see it come out, specifically down to, you know, comparisons of like sales, talking about, okay, I saw one tweet that was, you know, compared, you know, population of America, population of Britain, the number of people who play video games in one or the other, and then just comparing the number of mass shootings, you know, gun crime related between them, just saying, no, there's no way that this is the cause, because if that's what it was, if that was the difference, then we would see, you know, just assuming that you're arguing in good faith, this is a faulty argument on the evidence. So nice try, but I don't know, maybe your goal was to get us pissed off and talking about a different thing for a minute. Cool. In which case, sure, it worked a little bit, but yeah, no, this is fucking embarrassing is what it is.
Anymore, it's just like, show me the data. Like, if someone makes a claim that something's like, or something's a cause of something else, it's just like, show me some piece of data, and then mm-hmm. we'll talk about it after that.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It's I'm not surprised an older person said this. This is me. I don't know, because I'm not trying to paint it that, you know, like anybody who's old is going to think this, but I've heard this argument. I remember hearing this argument first from my uncle when I was like single digits, or like maybe 10 or 11, you know. And I feel like that opinion has kind of like persisted with people of that age group, or has not completely been, you know, vanished. No. Even though,
I think the one area where I will come down different than kind of the where most people in the video game community come down is, you know, a lot of the training in martial arts and military and psychology, etc., is directly based upon the idea that role-playing and behavior and practice, those sorts of things, you know, simulation can change behavior, and particularly with respect to violence. I think the core issue, though, is one, I don't think there's any evidence that extends to being a cause of crime.
No.
And also, I think there's a thing, I think it completely misses the point of, like, the reason we shouldn't be doing crime isn't because we can't or because we're afraid to.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's morally wrong.
Yeah.
My personal belief, you know, from my experience with martial arts, is I think Americans are just more violent. You know, I presumably a cultural thing, but like in my experience, American martial artists tend to be more violent than comparative martial artists in other countries. Not necessarily like more skilled, but just more aggressive, you know, ruthless, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So I tend to think it's most likely a cultural thing.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, like, you know, if you have a problem with alcohol, the first step is to get the fucking alcohol out of your house. It's not to turn off shows that have drinking in them.
Yeah. That there are so many conversations, like that there are conversations to be had about the effects that the effects of the media that somebody consumes, you know, sure. Just what like how that impacts them at a cultural level. You know, I can't speak to the level of violence that people have, but the amount of, you know, atomization and the amount of dehumanization that we just have by lack of direct exposure to other people, you know, the bowling alone problem, et cetera, like all of that, you know, is worth interrogating. That is so, you know, if you were triaging this, if you were triaging and trying to prioritize about what will save the most number of lives the quickest, and I'm not making an argument for, you know, anything drastic that the right would kick back against, like literally just talking about the problem. If you were triaging this and actually trying to figure out how to, like, what you would do to trim things back, you would talk about the guns. You would talk about ways, you know, to just do things that people generally agree would be okay, rather than looking, rather than saying, oh, it's because it, you know, it's because of the media. All of these arguments that are, you know, about, oh, we can't change the guns, so we're going to try and change people's hearts instead. You're not going to change people's hearts faster than you can change the guns. Right. Like, yeah. There's only so much that can that can solve whatever sickness is causing this. You know, there's only so much that you can do to fix the hate. That's a generational change to, you know, to fix the disregard for, you know, for other people walking around as human beings. That's generational. That is slower. That is not a way to stop the bleeding.
Well, to like what David said, it's a cultural level problem. And the analogy that I made of like an alcoholic, like sometimes it's very easy and clear, and sometimes not, but easy and clear to see, like on a personal level, someone's got a problem, they've got an addiction, they've got, you know, stuff in their life that needs to be cleaned out, and you can see the right way to do that. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, it can feel overwhelming to be like, okay, so on a societal level, if we're addicted to guns, you know, is a cold turkey purge of every gun and like, if we could wave a wand, right? Mm-hmm. A cold turkey purge of every gun and gun related piece of media in the nation. You know, like, some days I wake up and that, you know, you look at a headline, you're like, that doesn't sound really that bad to me if I could have my way.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just that it's such a weird kind of level to try to operate on this societal level. Like, yeah, you know, there's no easy answers.
I think on the other hand, it's like, you know, I think there is an issue where I think a lot of the core problem is, you know, societal is disenfranchisement. You know, whereas in San Francisco, there's some campaign putting up flyers, you know, you don't need a gun to feel powerful. It's like, actually, for a significant portion of America's population, that is literally the only way you can feel powerful.
And
you know, the vast majority of people have very little agency in their lives.
Yeah, and this is where the conversation crashes head, like in one hand, just, you know, head on into my, like, me rubbing my hands together in anticipation, alienation under neoliberal capitalism. You know, we're going to change people's hearts. But we're going to change people's hearts before we change the economic system. So.
I guess probably it sounds like what I was doing, the same thing everyone else was doing. I was looking up information about this over the weekend as far as like pertaining to shootings. One interesting thing I found was there was a federal assault weapons ban back in the 90s for like 8 years. Mm-hmm. That was in effect, and then had like sunset provisions. So then it like went out of effect without anyone having to vote on it. There was a correlation with less mass shootings when there were no federal or no assault rifles, but it did impact.
To be fair, it did not ban assault rifles.
It's called the federal assault weapons ban. I mean, I guess
and you know, if you look at any sort of, you know, surveillance program, it's going to be called the, you know, Patriot Act or the Protecting America's Children Act.
What specifically did it ban, David? If it didn't ban assault rifles,
it banned weapons with pistol grips, threading on the barrels for bayonet. It banned, I believe, magazines over 10 rounds. Couple of other things.
The article I'm looking at says that it bans weapons that have two or more, and then like the things that you're talking about.
Right, exactly.
The magazine size seems to be the most salient on that.
Yeah, let's back up and say to Ben's point, like, there were some kind of restrictions on the kind of weapons people could have. Down to the terminology, not as relevant, but there were restrictions, and what happened?
Oh, the interesting thing, so there was a decrease in mass shootings during the period that it was in effect. However, there wasn't any effect on gun violence, meaning people were still shooting one another, just not on a large scale.
Well, so I want to draw this to a close so we don't go on forever. A, it feels like we are being gaslit when this argument gets brought back out again. It's honestly like are you trying to fuck with my reality right now by doing this?
And to wrap it around to the kind of the original question, like we've given everyone way more than their money's worth on kind of pontification on this. Note that video games are a virtual non-factor in it. So,
like, yeah,
there's a lot of meaningful conversation to be had. It's not the fucking video game realm. So
yeah, anyway. it's a distraction. Like, we can be angry about this today. I assure you, between now when we're recording this, it's 10:45 on a Monday evening, and when this comes out, even on early release, this conversation will have shifted and changed, and people will say, oh, the video game thing, was that like 3 weeks ago? No, it was 3 days ago, because everything is fucked and we live in hell right now.
Yeah,
I was gonna say silver lining, because I was doing like research into like world massacres over the last 5 years, because that was a happy thing mm-hmm. to do over the weekend. But a silver lining is that at least like the U.S. government itself isn't like mass killing its own citizens. Like, that's like, at least we don't have to worry about that thing. So
give it time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. There, goodbye, silver lining.
No, so I'm in a mood.
Yeah.
I've been in a politics mood for 2, 3, 4 years. So hopefully we didn't alienate too many people. I needed to talk about that.
Yeah.
I needed to get, because I just, look at my Twitter over this past weekend. I was very active in thinking and responding to the coverage and stuff. So
I think we can take a strong stance also of Nazis are not okay.
Yeah. Fuck Nazis.
Fuck Nazis.
Just in case there's any confusion, this podcast does not support Nazis.
Yeah, if you're a Nazi and you're listening, go to fucking hell. Just go. We don't need you. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Weird. I feel weird.
The credit. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level As Heavy As It Got There in the last little bit. Going to remind you that Duckfest is happening on August the 31st. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckfest. Get your tickets, a full day of podcasts for a very reasonable price. What I would like to do is also have you go and leave a rating or review on iTunes. Greatly appreciated to the people who have done that. And most of all, please stick around and come back next week. We're going to try not to do the politics thing again. It's just in our blood, and there was a thing related to video games. am I forgetting
that,
anything?
That was our way in. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my Twitch streams at on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
Yeah, I've been Dennis Furia at deck_of_wonders on Twitter. and GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
You don't have to read. You don't have to read Twitter to be on Twitter.
No, I'm committed to not following anyone.
Yeah, no.
But I am also really excited about my game. So,
yeah, it's amazing.
I want to be where people
can find out. I'm so happy for you. David.
I'm David Mysmith. Just David Mysmith.
I'm Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. All right, who's got one?
I have two.
Okay.
I have Resident Evil 2 to the Third Power, styled as RE:2:3.
Okay.
And then I have Piss and Invigorate.
All right. Who else has one?
Or excuse me, Piss and Invigorate.
Ooh, okay. All right. Who else has some? Ben, what do you got?
I don't got anything. Sorry.
Okay. David?
I am going to claim that Dennis took all mine, and that definitely I didn't not have any.
We had at least one person taking notes, though. That's what matters.
I only had one, and it's a thing that I said that I was proud of. I know that's bullshit, but I'm a harvest that. Talking about the beat.
What was the context for that?
The
forager.
The beat people in
Forager.
Yeah, the beats.
Oh, yeah.
In
harvesting
in Forager.
Clapping beats. Where did they get off?
I like pissin and vinaigrette.
Yeah, I think that.
Done.
Yep.
It matches the end of the show. So.
There you go. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah.
I could go for some vinegar.
Just don't invite Ben.
Oh man, some fresh cut fries with some vinegar on them.
Mm.
Yeah.
what about like balsamic vinegar, Ben?
Yeah, I'm down with that.
Okay.
Something that really confuses me is the degree to which, like, how many really, really popular foods and, like, scents are basically various forms of rotting.
Yeah. I mean, we're all rotting, technically.
Thanks, Tyler Durden.
I'm actually not sure if that's true.
Oh, all right. Well, I need to go.
Have a restful night, everyone.
Yep.
Cole, I hope things level out on your side for your grandpa and family.
I'll keep you guys updated.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
All right. Take care, everybody. Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye, guys.